want to hear about your dreams.
I'm really good at computers. It's fun, too. Kind of like the only time I really feel alive.
No, no, your dreams. Not what you think will make you rich. Your passion.
Oh, maybe being like a doctor for animals or their dogs. Because sometimes if I look at an animal, there's like a special connection.
Dreams! I didn't ask you what part of a dog do you want to touch. Okay, let's try this in reverse. You're famous. What is the thing you do that makes everyone clap?
Oh, once I got claps for doing a juggling ball thing, because I unicycle in Haiti when I was volunteering.
Yes, clowning! Yes, now you're dreaming. That's your dream. Well, perhaps we should juggle your priorities.
Oh.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. Today, it is a very special three magicians, three mics. We have a longtime friend, short-term fan of the show.
True.
Who's going to just rip us to shreds.
Maybe.
In a good way.
Maybe.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's John Armstrong.
Hey, guys.
Applause.
I'm super happy to be here. I'm so excited to be here on what I've titled the Extra Central Whiners Convention. It's amazing how often I have listened to this podcast, which again happens monthly, right? And there's a time you were to put them out like
I'm doing every 2 weeks now.
Now, okay, all right. Whenever they come out,
the highly variable schedule.
Which I think, you know, adds, you know, like it's a surprise when it pops up in my podcatcher. I'm like, oh wow!
No, I go for the first of the month. If it's the first day of a month, you know, there's a new episode.
Right.
I guarantee
and
that.
And then possibly more sometimes.
Then occasionally more will show.
So I can't tell you how. So I listen. I perform, or you know, on ships and in corporate events, and I'm doing things, and I'll go out to the gym to work out, or I'm walking around, and I'm listening to this podcast that comes on. And
John leads an active, blessed lifestyle.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I wanted to throw in that I'm working, by the way. Yeah. I'm trying to throw that in.
Oh, I noticed.
So I can't tell you how often I have been listening to this podcast on my earphones. You two say something. One of the two of you say something, and then I shout out loud to people who do not know what I'm talking about, what the hell are you talking about? Like, I'll say that out loud. And so I've decided to take a little – I'm not joking. I took a little journal. This is the actual journal that I have here in my hand.
It's a nice small black moleskin type thing.
And I have a whole section where I have just scribbled random notes over the last year of things that I said, if I ever get a chance to get on this podcast, I want to ask you about.
Oh, no.
Because I'm very curious about really what you meant by that. Yeah. So can I mention just a couple overarching
thought.
Topics?
I forget and we get too deep into the rabbit hole, I need to thank the people that donated to the podcast this month.
Oh, yes, thank them.
Because like for a while it was kind of pretending that people donated, but this month people legit donated and we made some money. So thank you very much.
Do you say their name so they get a little street cred?
I don't want to like give their full name. But
okay. We don't know if they would like, you know, they might not want to be identified.
The last one I
something.
Sent a thank you to and they said that I just want to be known as anonymous. So
that's in
the email.
Fair enough.
But so thank you. If you like the podcast, it costs like $20 to keep it going every month. You can go to Two Magicians One Mic. Download a few dollars and download the podcast. You can give us a few dollars.
Download some dollars.
And there's been a demand for a Patreon. People want to give us money monthly. I got an email back that said, "Hey, thanks, but you really should have a monthly thing." So look for that too on the website.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And also,
I'd give you guys a couple bucks a month. Seriously,
sweet.
I would. In fact, I'll do that right now. I'm just gonna give you cash.
Well, it all goes to Nick. I get none of it, but that's okay. He does all the work, so it's fair.
If we make enough, Simon, I'm gonna buy
you
dinner.
I just turn up and complain existentially. Apparently,
not just complain. Whine. Whining. Whinging, as the British would say.
Well, it is my heritage. And by the way, another sort of side note for those listening, particularly those not immersed in the pro magic industry, what's actually happening now is I'm really enjoying this because this is you get to experience a little piece of really what we all do, which is give each other notes. That's one of the biggest misconceptions about magic from outside is people don't realize how intensely collaborative it is. And what we, you know, we being kind of anyone who sort of is good or experienced or has a clue or we respect or whatever, we are constantly inviting each other to watch our shows and give us notes. And amongst those who can take it, which tend to be the good ones, is a note is often like, what the hell is wrong with you? Fix this, do that, Jesus Christ. And that is a entirely acceptable thing. That's just how we talk to each other because this is constructive. So I was aware if people didn't know that, they might be about to hear what's about to happen.
Right.
Go, oh my God, this is so mean and horrible.
No, this is what we do to each other.
This comes
from a place of love. First of all, my first note is you always seem to take over the conversation, Simon. That's my first note. Second note is, I want this to everyone to know that you two are, I would consider you both very, very, very close friends of mine. You were both at my wedding, which was a great wedding not too long ago. And, you know, my wife loves both of you. So there's that. And so I know we're friends, and I am notorious, maybe, shall we say, I correct me if I'm wrong, for being very blunt when it comes to these type of note delivery systems.
Oh, yeah.
So that is it. So I want to start with one basic question, and it's to the both of you first. my question is Simon actually the co-host or not? So that is what I need to know. It's been bugging me this entire time. It kind of goes back and forth. Please answer this question.
So Schrodinger's co-host.
It says on the Instagram, and sometimes co-hosted by Things by Simon.
I see.
I do say yes, sometimes, because the past couple months, Simon's like hasn't been in town. He's been on ships as much as you have.
Right.
And we were going to try to Skype from when you were in Japan or Thailand or something, and you're like, I can't get good internet. So that's why Taylor Hughes filled in that one day.
Right.
So that's the issue.
But when you do like the solo one-on-one interviews, that's usually you just interviewing somebody else, right, Nick?
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about maybe having both of you there to interview another person? Because what I like about that is that you both seem to have at least a – I mean, it's not a similar point of view. It's actually – there's definitely contrast with your points of view. So it might be nice to see someone actually go back and forth with a guest about what they're talking about.
Best episode ever, the Rocco interview.
I was going
to
say
Rocco. Yeah, and I literally point to it right here on the thing. I've mentioned right here in my Macau Sessions notes because there's a whole session just on the Macau Sessions. At one point in the Macau Sessions, what I love is that Simon will go on and on and on about a certain thing, and you occasionally, at the beginning, Nick, you kind of like, you know, you'll kind of, you know, politely, but kind of like, you know, fight, you know, like sort of push back here or there as you're talking because you're like, oh, I don't know if I agree completely with that particular point. But as the Macau Sessions go on, it becomes this Stockholm syndrome where you stop pushing back and you just agree with whatever Simon says because you're afraid, oh no, my only friend is going to not talk to me if I don't agree with him.
John,
that's what I believe.
I just want to say, John, you do cruise ships and you're trapped on a ship with people that you don't really know for like what 6-7 days at a time at most. We were trapped for 3 months, so I think that is absolutely correct.
Okay.
I did not.
I think it was also
that you alienate him.
I think it was also your will had just been broken.
I think
right.
So.
Yeah, and you took advantage of it, like the master manipulator you are. So here I have a couple questions then, Nick. Can you tell? Now that you're back in freedom, you're here, you know, and you know you're on the outside. Maybe the Stockholm syndrome has wore off a little bit.
Sure.
And if I ask you these questions, that you know that he seemed to have a very strong opinion about.
This is just.
But you just sort of went away. I'm curious to know if you really felt the way that you were when you kept saying, "Uh huh, yeah."
I honestly don't even know what you're. It's such a blur.
Okay, I'll give you an example. So there are a couple of times where both of you contradict each other depending on the episode, meaning that you say you go. Oh, there's a great huge thing where you go in this rant, Simon, about how we're playing for everybody. It doesn't matter if there's a couple people who don't get it. We're playing for the masses. You know, this is you shouldn't have to worry about what the little things are. You know, that thing is we're getting it's important that it plays to everybody. The layman's the most important person. It's the layman. Mm. That's who we're doing magic for. The layman.
Yeah.
And then 2 episodes later, you spend an entire rant talking about how, you know, if you worry about the little details, there's going to be that one guy in the show that is going to be so impressed by that that he's going to know that when you say the molecules of the coin, these are your actual words.
Yeah. I remember the molecules thing. Yeah.
Right? The actual coin. When you say that, then he's going to know that that actually means, you know, that you're actually saying the right verbiage. Thus, he's then going to hire you for a show because he respects you more for doing your research. So what is it, Simon? Should you care or should you not care?
I thought the question was directed
at me. I'm sorry, Nick. Because, by the way, you agreed both times with him.
Sure, I did.
So on both completely different points, you were like, oh, okay, sure. Yeah, I get this. Yeah, what do you think? Do you think?
No, I agree with the hypocrisy there.
yeah.
I think if I had to choose, I would go to the first one, because I think you should have a show that does play to the masses, but is still your own voice and still like speaks truthfully to your own artistic blah 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 blah. I think
we're going to get into art in a minute, but go right ahead.
I think you're right. I think I was placating Simon in that moment.
Yeah,
I do.
No, there's a couple times where I wish if you were on video, I could see you. Like, I could think, just blink three times if you're being held captive.
I don't think that was any. That wasn't like me being consciously going, oh, I need to not piss Simon off, because Simon, I don't think, would care if I did.
No. And by the way, obviously, I'm doing this mostly in jest. But Simon, I think you could. You're one of the most gracious acceptors of notes that I've ever, you know.
Yeah.
And I lay into you on a pretty much a daily basis. Yeah. So it's not. I'm not saying anything negative about you, of course, but my point is that neither one of you made a firm stand on this, and I want to hear what your firm stand is.
No, I think I would say, yeah, I think you should have a show that plays to the masses. And I would say probably the reason we were dwelling on that, at least if I'm going back into the recesses of my mind, I would say we probably had a week of shows of just terrible audiences of people that weren't getting it. So maybe that's why I was more... Mm. I don't know, leaning that way that week as opposed to 2 weeks prior. That's not an excuse, but that's my only real rationale.
Yeah. I've blocked out most of it from post-traumatic stress.
I honestly, yeah, people have brought up things to me about the Macau sessions.
No, we have no memory.
I don't remember at all.
But honestly, I think that inconsistency in my viewpoint is probably the fact that I'm still trying to figure this shit out.
Okay.
Right? And so week by week, you know, my views on it are evolving and changing and shifting and... And I think, honestly, if I think about it now in hindsight, I think both are important, but the mass is way more important if you want career success.
So what I extrapolated from all this, from listening to the two points, because I think it just gets to a point where everyone just sort of starts talking in circles in these things, and I get that. But the other is that maybe it's like you care about, and again, I'm using the royal you, I'm talking about both of you or anyone in this conversation. You care about some people, but maybe about not other people. And when I mean by other people, I mean magicians. Mm. So it's like I'm doing a show, and I want my show to sound intelligent and interesting and whatever, but I don't necessarily care about fooling the magicians in the back row. So because that's kind of what I took away from that. Does that make any sense to either one of you guys?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
And I mean, and it's funny, isn't it? Because even though I 100% do stand by that, the objective is not to fool the magicians or whatever. But at the same time, as we all know, a lot of us get gigs through rep in the magic industry.
Right.
Right? Amazing and impressing magicians, whether by fooling them or just impressing them with your good work, can actually be a good career move.
So I have a whole thought process about this. And this is one of the things, again, I out loud said, you know, I was shouting when out loud I was listening to the podcast, is that I think this whole idea is, like, I don't perform for magicians is usually a cop-out, and it's usually a sign of a laziness. And one of the ways to really genuinely try to think about how to be original and how to play best for the room is, for anybody, is to think, what would entertain, not necessarily fool, but what would entertain magicians?
Yeah.
And what does entertain magicians? The same old hack lines, bits, and stock tricks that we've seen a gajillion times. But what does entertain magicians is interesting new creative ideas. Yeah. So I definitely want to be in the job of entertaining everybody, including magicians.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily care about fooling magicians, though I have, you know, I take pride in fooling magicians as one of my hobbies, but in a kind of general show, I want to do stuff that seems like it will play to everybody. And especially if a magician saw my show, they would be like, oh, wow, that's interesting. I've never seen that before. You know. And I think that's something that I actually think that's a good bar to go by. Not fooling magicians, but entertaining magicians. Yeah. If that would be a good mark of creativity.
And also there's a big difference between, you know, like if you guys are in the room or other magicians I respect or admire, then I do care a lot more about what they think versus, you know, your average kind of goober, self-indulgent magician who doesn't really care that much. And
right. So tangentially going from this, on producing your own fringe show, that was the name of the podcast, that title of the podcast.
I regret everything about that episode.
You regret everything about that episode? I'll let you see if you know what trap I'm about to walk you down. So what thing do you think about when it comes to that episode? Does anything stand out as something that you thought, this is probably not?
I genuinely cannot even remember anything we talked about, but I know that my viewpoint, I'm thinking about an article I wrote for Magic Magazine back when I was columning, that in hindsight I would rebut many of my own points I made just about fringes and fringe festivals and fringe shows generally.
Right.
My view on them has changed a lot over the years.
So, all right, here we go. So here's a line that you actually said, and I'd rather make the show good than popular.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Did he say that or did I?
You said that. That was
me, I think, even at the time, because I remember saying that line both on and off the podcast. That is me admitting a character flaw I have. I don't think that's a good thing. That was me going, God damn it, I'm such a broken human being. I'm so obsessed with blah, blah, blah. Then I spend time on this when I should be spending time and actually promoting it and making it popular.
Right. Yeah. Okay, because there's no reason it can't be both, right?
Oh, yeah,
And also on top of that, like, if you know that your skill set is X, you should then try to get somebody else to do the skill sets that are Y. You need to then have somebody else do the promo and
oh, my
and
God,
whatnot.
The amount of publicists I've hired over the years who have been atrocious. Now, that's the problem. Right. Clearly, I don't have a publicity skill set. I also clearly don't have a finding a good publicist skill set.
Right.
That one's a harder one to fix.
Once again, another shout-out, as you always say, another shout-out to Barbara Dillon, who did a great job for us.
Exactly. She was great. Yeah, you found her, not me.
Yeah, but that's only because I admit that when it comes to my skill sets that business is not one of them. But at least I know the difference between someone who's going to work, and I can like lay out a plan.
Yeah.
I might not be able to do the work, but I think anytime you hire anybody to do something for you, you need to actually have literally a checklist of what you're going to ask them to do, and then they're going to do this checklist, and if they don't do this checklist, then they're not getting paid. Like they need to do X, Y, and Z, and they need to be able to do it, in a reasonable amount of time and get that done. And it can't be goals like make me famous, because that makes no sense. But if the goals are, if the tasks are as simple as send out press releases, make sure you're here for these interviews, set up these times, you know, blah 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 blah. That's the kind of stuff that actually can be done and easily, you know, checked off a list and someone can do for you while you are then working on your show.
Yeah.
So, that made sense to me. So. Couple of just sort of random things. So many times you mention, Nick, that this podcast is supposed to be PG. So that I took just 10 episodes and counted the number of times that you would go past the PG ratings for a podcast. Simon says, fuck, and if you can bleep that out,
it's fine.
Four times at different points. And the phrase piece of shit is used so often on this podcast, I can't even tell you. I stopped counting, and I'm not exaggerating, at 16. Not just shit, because shit comes up too by itself, but piece of shit by itself 16 times. Seven times alone in the 100 Million Monkeys episode.
The last episode, I said I'm trying to transition this podcast into a PG-13 rating.
Right. Well, you can't say fuck twice as long as it's not fucking, right? You can't say true. I'm gonna fornicate. You can't say that, but you can use it as a.
We've already hit the R rating for this episode.
I'm loving my now mental image of like John with the like detective type big board on the wall tracking the stats of this
pieces
obsession
of
with the podcast.
Going
is great.
From photo to photo.
I love it.
Because again, I just want to know where your wheelhouse is, man. Because I don't mind. I say fuck every day. It's my favorite thing to say. But if you're gonna, you gotta pick a lane.
To
man.
Be
pick
fair,
a lane.
This podcast, still an Apple podcast, I believe, still shows up as explicit. So I think we're okay.
Okay.
That's something
That's
I put
amazing.
In when I first created it in 2012 and never changed. although I have to go back into Feedburner and figure that out now. But I'm pretty sure it still shows up. I could be wrong.
Early in the Macau sessions, Simon orders his catchphrase, which is piece of shit. Utters his catchphrase, piece of shit.
This is a great. This is already a voyage of self-discovery. And I didn't realize I said that much.
Yeah, and says, and then says, what is the rating for this podcast? And you go, oh, I'm just trying to keep it PG, and you know, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, oh, okay, good, okay, I understand. All right, well, we can bleep that out. We can bleep that out. 4 more times in that one podcast. He then keeps saying the word shit. It's so funny. So anyway, there you go. I was curious about that. So let's talk about...
I just love how John's like yesterday going, yeah, feel free to ask me questions.
No, ask me questions, guys.
This is
great.
No, we're going to keep this going for
this is already my favorite episode of all time. How did you get this on a podcast? This just doesn't happen.
This all came yesterday from you all came to a show I directed, and then you gave me notes on the show I directed, and... All of it was correct and all of it was valid, but it got me in my head of, oh, I missed all these things. And I don't even think that's necessarily true, yeah, but that's how it
felt. But that's why notes are good. We all miss things all the time.
Oh, yeah,
we're
man.
All human and fallible. Yeah. None of us
but
can
I
see
it.
All shows
just,
come in blind. I get blinders.
Oh, God,
on,
yeah. We've
I
given
have,
you notes that are similar
yeah.
to all
I have
yeah,
a lot of magician acquaintances that I see their show and go, this would be a lot better if you just got notes or if you had somebody direct it or if you just said, hey, what do you think of this? And there's a few people I'm just kind of waiting. I'm like, hey, it'd be great if it doesn't have to be me. It can be anybody. Just you need advice and you need people to guide you. And every piece in my show now has gotten better because of both of you in various, like, even if it's a little tiny moment and it, you can't grow without advice. Anyway, continue
Can we, let's talk about this because you're on a topic that I genuinely love. You'll never learn anything by talking. So
it's the only profound thing I think Larry King has ever said is I've never learned anything when I was something was coming out of my mouth.
It's a paraphrase actually of I think it's a Twain quote, but the point
I think
is,
so.
Yeah. But the point is, I hate it when someone says, "Hey, what did you think of the show?" And then I will say, "Well, I can just tell you something in general, or if you really want me to give you real notes, I'm happy to give you real notes." And they say, "Sure, give me real notes." And then. So I give them the out. I gave them the out. And then I give them real notes, and then they debate me on their notes the entire time. They don't listen. And that's usually just when I shut down and move on. So I don't think that everything that comes out of my mouth, though I seem to think that, it does seem that way, but I don't think everything that comes out of my mouth is perfect or is going to fit the person I'm saying this to. My perspective on art or entertainment is obviously going to be different than yours, so on and so forth. Everybody has their own opinions, but I'm looking in generalities. And if I give these generalities to you and then you then go, okay, and you at least absorb them and walk away and then say, okay, this makes sense. This makes sense. You know, I disagree here. Let's see. I can see what they're saying, so maybe it doesn't work. So maybe I can keep working the way that I want to work, but I got to tweak it. This I'm just going to disregard because I don't. You know, I know I'm on the right path. I just got to get there. What the point? That is, you make those assumptions. You make those, I don't know, judgments after the note session, way after the note session, when you're working on this stuff on your own. That's when you do it. I can't tell you how many great notes that I've gotten over the years from guys like John Lovick and you and you, Nick. I mean, like all great notes from, you know, stellar performers all over the place. And they're notes that I've completely ignored, absolutely outright, and I was right to ignore them. But I didn't do it at the time. I did it later. And
you try it out, and if it doesn't work, it's like, that's
exactly.
Wrong.
That doesn't fit, or that doesn't work, or, you know, that's all that matters. And so you just have to be accepting of those type of notes. And maybe, if any one lesson can be brought out from this one podcast is that being able to be accepting of such notes and move forward and process with it only makes us better entertainers.
Well, it occurs to me it's actually potentially a good example of actually getting to experience that in real time. Because a lot of people who are resistant to notes or don't really know how to take them have maybe never really gone through this experience.
So
knows? Well, let's keep going. I've learned I say POS too much.
Yeah, you do.
I didn't know that.
And that might have been just the fact that you were. It happens much more through the Macau sessions than at any other time, and I think it had a lot to do with just your pent up frustration. Yeah. you know, I mean, it's amazing. So here's you guys are so incredibly wrong when it comes to airline miles, when it comes to frequent flyer programs.
I have since taken my position back on this.
Or anything like that. You have no idea what you're talking about. And literally, two Google searches would have solved all of your problems for you. So
let's let the listeners know what you're.
You mention about the rewards points, about how we're flying all these different places for cruise ships and whatever, and I don't even have silver status on an airline. That's exactly your words. Mm, yep. I don't even have silver status on an airline because it's all these different airlines, and I don't know what's going on, and I don't can't get the mileage for all this, and you have to get. So, and that's what you say, as though it'd be impossible for you to get any kind of status or perks or benefits from the airlines that you're being booked on because it's too spread out and there's no way that you'd be able to actually
the only rebuttal to that is not that it would be impossible. I was where it was probably possible, but I merely didn't know how to do it.
Okay,
I always knew I was clearly missing something.
But that is not clear what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're saying you on the podcast, you say there's no way to do it because there's all these different airlines.
Right.
You literally say the words, there's no way to do it.
Gotcha. Poor choice of words.
By the way, there's a way to do it. Okay. Because all airlines, for the most part, fall under three categories. They're either SkyTeam, which is the Delta Airlines, which is Air France, Korean Air, so on and so forth. Then there's United and Star Alliance. That's all the Star Alliance airlines. And then American, which is One World, which is British Airways, Carthay Air, there's a bunch of other ones. Anyway, most airlines, the major airlines, not the JetBlues, not the Southwests, but everything else usually falls into one of these three categories. They all work with each other. So all you need to do is get a credit card with one of those companies, in this case, let's say Delta for SkyTeam, and then that you can then get all of your points when you get when anything Aeromexico, Aerolinus, all these other airlines that they honor, you can get your SkyMiles for that to up your status. You then, by getting your credit card and then spending on your credit card, that takes care of your money spent, that then allows you to then get into your status tiers. And then the other thing I would say that every performer that is traveling on a regular basis needs to have is an American Express Platinum card. Period. You need to have an American Express Platinum card. For $550 a year, you get lounge access to pretty much every airport lounge in the entire world. It's amazing. But I haven't started yet with the benefits.
Please tell us more.
You get $200 a year in Uber credits, meaning that you whenever you use Uber, every month they put $15 into your account, $35 in December, and you just can spend those Uber credits and use it on Uber. You get TSA Pre and Global Entry for free. Whenever you spend, if you buy those two things, you get that for free. You then get $200 on any airline that you choose. That then, whenever you have to spend like for a baggage fee or you buy like a drink on the plane, it reimburses that amount up to $200 per year. You get 5x miles on any kind of thing when you buy airline ticket. So if I buy an airline ticket on Delta, if I buy the same ticket on my regular Delta ticket, Sky Miles, I'd make 2x miles. But on here, I make 5x miles and get that back onto my card.
That's a lot of miles.
It's a lot of miles, and it gets your status up. There is no way that I'd have the status which I have, One World. I hardly ever fly American, but because I figured out a way to do it through British Airways and get a credit card with British Airways, I have a status on One World. I have basically Ruby, which gets me free luggage, gets me priority check-in, and priority boarding, which we need if we're going to carry our carry-ons and make sure they actually can get on. They don't make us check our carry-ons. We need priority boarding. So it takes care of One World. And any of that stuff. And then Delta, I basically am a platinum medallion. I have the second highest tier of all. I get into all the lounges. I have, it's a huge ass, free bags, upgrades to first class, and all the stuff you need when you're traveling on a regular basis. And that's only because I'm spending enough money to then make it make sense on those cards, but I can then write. And here's the best part. Oops, I just dropped the pen. I can write off the $550 that I spend on the American Express card. So all those benefits that actually total more than $550 a year, once you actually put them all together, because you also get status on all these different car rental places. You get status on SPG and Hilton rewards. So you actually instantly have their higher tier status, which means you get upgraded in your hotels. Those crappy hotels they put you up in when you go to do ships. Here's the way to make sure that you can get a better upgrade for those hotels. Boom, 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 boom. And I can write off the $550 a year as a business expense every single year. So that's how you do that.
Nice.
And all you have to do to look this stuff up is go to thepointsguy.com and one Google search of the points guy, and what you need to do will get you the kind of stuff that you would need as far as the credit cards. Tells you exactly which credit cards goes, compares them for you, how you're going to do it. And I think it has a lot to do with the airline or the group that you decide to choose. Has a lot to do with where you live. So like right now we live in LAX. I go to Orlando a lot because Orlando's my hometown. And both of those are Delta hubs. So Delta obviously is my primary airline because it makes sense. There are other airlines that if you lived in Miami and you would 100% want to be with American because that's an American hub. So you pick your stuff up from that. And then when they're assigning you these airlines, be picky and say, you know what? Can I just go ahead and take this trip instead? And I know it cost me $20 more, but I'm willing to pay the extra $20. Because for that extra $20, then you're going to be able to keep your status. Or talk to the ships to be able to say, hey, if I book my flights and you just reimburse me, could that work? Then they'll do that too sometimes. And usually on some of the ships I do, I just say, I want the Delta. And they'll just give me the Delta or Delta partner.
I sent you guys this meme I made. It's from Up in the Air. And it's what's George Clooney talking. I don't spend a nickel if I can help it. Unless it somehow profits my mileage account, and that's how I feel about John Armstrong.
And it's really how it's on it. If you're going to be miserable on these flights, and I don't disagree with you at all when it comes to the travel. Sometimes can be very unbearable. That's not you're not getting an argument out of me from that. But if you got to do it, you might as well do it in style, where you get to hang out in the lounge for free and get the free drinks and get the free high speed Wi-Fi. You know, and if you're going to be stuck in an airport for 4 hours, be stuck at an airport lounge, not sitting in some bench.
It's funny because in hindsight, and we already had the first part of that conversation offline a couple of weeks ago, and I already was down with all the alliances. Like, even with the alliances, I still wasn't getting status. The bit I hadn't realized was the credit cards.
Yeah, you need a credit card.
That's the bit I'd been missing about the whole equation.
Yeah, so. Because it used to be it was just miles, but see, somebody in corporate realized that you have to do a minimum dollar spend.
Yeah.
So the way to get around the minimum dollar spend is the credit card. The credit card then whatever you put on the credit card, and you just put everything on it. You just put your monthly bills on the credit card and just pay them off every month the way you would normally.
Yeah.
And then that just gives you free.
Yeah, use that credit card as your credit card.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then
that's it. Yeah. I have two credit cards that are in constant use, which is American Express Delta Reserve card, which gives me my status for Delta, and then the Platinum card that I was just talking about. Those are the two cards.
And what are you doing with your British Airways one? Is that kind of off of the side?
I just off the side because I once I got the status, but here's a great thing. British Airways status doesn't expire in a year. It expires every 2 years.
Ah, right. So that every was, that 2 years, you have to get the minimum on that.
That was the loophole that I found.
So you just have this extra small part-time job of keeping track of your spends on the different credit cards.
Yeah, and there's a program
along
called
with
Mint
the amount of times I say piece of shit. You have a lot of graphs in your
there's
office.
There's no graphs. There's one program called Mint.
Ah, okay.
And it does everything for you. Program everything into you program the credit cards into that. Excuse me.
I use Mint. It is it's very helpful, but it occasionally doesn't update correctly, so you have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Yep. But anyway, that's what you should be doing. If you're going to be doing that, nothing made me yell more actually than when you were talking about that. I'm like, guys, you were doing this wrong. Mostly because I just want you to be happy in your part, you know, because then maybe the podcast ultimately will be happier. Mm-hmm. And you'll be like, you know what? This is a long trip, but at least I got to ride first class or business class, and then, that's going to make life happier. Yeah. And that's going to make the podcast happier. That's going to make all the listeners happier.
Which, by the way, is a really good point going back to just taking notes, which is really, I think, the underlying thing of this whole thing. When I see a show that's just, if I'm willing to give notes on a show, it's a compliment. it means I think there's something here that's worth making better. If I genuinely just cannot stand a show, I don't even bother giving notes to the person.
You're not going to give notes on something you didn't connect with or didn't enjoy.
If it's just irreversibly terrible, I'm like, it was fine, and just move on. If there's notes, that means the person's actually investing in it and, again, wants you to be happy.
Oh, I hate it when somebody sees my show and goes, or someone I respect or somebody I know go, that was fun.
Yeah, right, which, yeah. Means they either don't respect it enough to give notes, or they don't respect you enough to think you can take notes.
Yeah.
Either way is bad.
Or they're just, it could be the other thing of their, they're maybe a little bit jealous of something you're doing, or I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the ego in me talking. But.
So, right, what's next? Why didn't Simon Talks About Stationery Endlessly become a regular part of the show? I thought that was going to be like a segment with you just talking about stationery.
Wait, when did we do that?
I was when you carried like 50 pounds of paper from Santa Monica via the metro.
Yeah, and at one point you literally drop it on, and I'm like, I thought that could just be a regular part of the podcast. This is what A4 paper sounds like, and you just drop
thud.
There was a lot of paper talk. There was a very large amount of paper talk there.
That's amazing.
And the other riffs that I've just, these are just random riffs that I've written over, like I said, over the last year. How have you not seen Matt King? That makes no sense to me. I know you've been to Las Vegas.
Right? Yeah, I've seen Mac many times.
I'm looking at you. I'm sorry.
No, yeah. Every time we go to Vegas, he's either not there or we're missed because he does afternoon shows. So we somehow always miss him, and that's my fault.
That's
I should
amazing.
Plan better.
That is amazing.
I've seen him a lot on video, so it's not like I haven't seen what he does. But yeah, I know what you mean.
What's even funnier about that is I literally a week and a half ago was in Japan spending about 5 days with Matt King and a bunch of other performers as part of a gala show there. So I've seen him another 5 times now.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Konnichiwa. Matt King.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. Actually, it was amazing.
That's what
he did such a great job with it.
Oh,
he
great.
Learned some bits of Japanese and Shoot was doing the translations for the rest of it. And it was really well done by both of them.
Oh, I don't know.
It was a
it.
Great little
yeah.
thing.
I mean, I love that. Konnichiwa. I love that. It's so great to me. All right, Simon, is magic an art?
I don't care.
Okay,
I think that's the wrong question.
Because boy, did you go back and forth on that particular.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I think
you both have.
Well, and also, that's another thing that's still like an open question for me, blah, blah, blah. But I think at the moment, my current stance on it is I think that's the wrong question. I think it's not a useful question.
Okay.
I think is this show worth watching is a good question. And how do we make the show better is a good question. Because I think we talked about this. Was the only times it matters if something's an art is A, if you're trying to get government arts funding
for
it,
you're
trying to defend
this.
It in court, or C, you're trying to impress an arts hipster. Otherwise, why does it matter if it's an art? Except
well,
for really those three things.
I see, that's where I disagree, because I think maybe the definition of art is different in between.
Oh, yeah, and it always is, right? Art's something that people never
I think art is something
fully
that,
agree on the definition
so,
of.
So, because when it comes to me, though, and I guess the argument I wanted to get into with you about this is that I've always said that magic starts as a craft first.
Mm.
Mastering the craft is the art.
Oh, yeah.
So unlike, say, like painting, right? Mm. Technically, if I spread a bunch of paint on a wall, I can say this is art. Mm. I can say that, right? But there's a lot of people who are going, well, there's no craft in that. Mm. So you have a debate whether or not the craft is necessary for the art, okay? There is no debate with magic. That's the difference.
Mm.
You have to have the craft for it to be art.
Yeah, interesting.
Because if magic is the goal, if giving amazement, if giving the idea of some sort of live special effect is the goal, and that is what we're defining magic as, then if there is no craft, then the illusion falls apart, and thus there is no magic, thus there is no art.
Yeah.
So to me, it's always been magic is a craft first, and those who master the craft then are working as artists. Mm. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to throw that past you.
Sure.
In the Instagram. So,
well, I think the thing with art is always there is absolutely no one accepted universal definition of it, right? And so any debate about is something an art eventually gets to, well, what do you define as art? And then there'll be no consensus on that. And that's a well explored topic. Like, you know, we're both Scott McCloud fans.
Yeah.
You know, he's got one of the many arguable definitions of art that I dislike the least. Like, they're all wrong in their own way because they're all subjective, but his being anything that isn't about survival or reproduction.
Yeah.
Which I like because it's very inclusivist. And by that, obviously magic's an art. Duh. It fits the definition, absolutely. No argument. But again, I don't know if that's a useful conclusion to come to for the aforementioned reasons.
Right. And you also seem, this is all the assignment focused, but you also seem to have a big...
Fine with me.
You But no, do you have an opinion on this?
No, I agree with everything you just said. I think, yeah, you've enunciated how I've seen it, and you put it into words how my brain is kind of always processing craft first, and then you can play with the artsy side. I think once you, and that was something I was really hounding on the show I just directed to bring it back to me, because this podcast is always about me,
as it should be. Nick.
It is. Right. I started it. The show I just directed, they wanted it to be more of a comedy show first and then a magic show second. I'm like, no, if there's magic involved, it's got to be good. It's got to be solid. And so I spent most of the time working the magic, and then the artistic side of it, the art came out of that in terms of comedy or story arc, whatever. There's a lot more they have to do to progress, and it's very good, but needs to get better. But I think what you said defines that perfectly.
Yeah, because I mean, to me, like, I just want there to be good magic, and magic to me is where the art comes from. I think there is an art of magic. Where it falters is that when we have folks who are basically doing performance art and saying it's magic.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can be funny, and then you can do a lame trick. And you can call yourself a magician, but you're really not. You're doing performance art in that, in my opinion. You know, you can do this really amazing, long scripted, long winded story about, you know, like the ancient heavens and all this other stuff, and then a teeny, teeny, tiny magic trick that is not very fooling to anybody. And are you a magic? No, you're a magician. No, you're a storyteller. Yeah. And so to me, like, I think when magic is strong and when it is an art is when the audience is actually, and I have no other better way of saying this, fooled. And that's actually something else you both have rallied against, is the word being fooled. And I get that. I understand that fooled is a very negative connotation, and it doesn't sound very nice in play. I get all that. I'm not saying. But there really is no better way to describe what you're trying to do when magic's at its height, when people are honestly astonished that you're giving them astonishing moments. Maybe that is the better way to describe it. That's what it is. You're fooling them, but you're bringing them into a new world. You're doing a live special
event. Anybody who comes to the castle is expecting that, too. You can always see when somebody comes out of a show and they go, oh, that was very funny, but there wasn't enough magic. People are, if they're excited to see a magician or go to a place that has magic, they want to be fooled.
Well, there was that theory about the different sort of variety arts. I mean, you know, magic, comedy, juggling, acting, burlesque, you know, snake charming, whatever. And about, if you think of most of them, many of them come down to one core experience. Like, comedy has to be funny or it's not comedy. It's the intrinsic thing. Burlesque kind of has to be titillating. That's sort of the core thing. And then within that, it can be funny.
No pun intended. See what I did there?
Boobs.
Circus normally has to be impressive. You watch an impressive feat, a juggler, an acrobat, make you go, wow, that was hard. And magic has to be astonishing. You have to have your mind blown. Have to go, holy crap, wow.
Right.
And without that, it is not magic. It might be something great, but it's a different thing.
And so I think that goes back to my whole point of, you have to be impressed. You have to entertain the magicians too. Because even if they might know the method, they will still be impressed with a good method.
Yeah.
They'll still be impressed with something. And if that method is really solid and fools everybody, you know, and maybe even like 20% fools the magicians. Yeah. That's great. That's great.
Makes
like,
them go, wait, what?
Yeah, and I think dismissing, I've always considered a cop-out to dismiss, I don't perform for magicians. I've always considered that a cop-out. And I think that kind of wraps back on this.
Yeah, that's fair. And the other thing, again, if you ask most people of their definitions of art, it will often include the concept of expressing something or expressing an emotion or an idea through it, which, again, it is a thing art can do if you want, if you're into that. And I definitely am into that. I don't think that's a prerequisite for it to be art, personally, as mentioned. But hell yeah, once you've got the craft mastered, then you can go interesting places with the magic. Then you can explore the emotions it's triggering, the points you're making with it, what you're doing for the audience with that, within that space, and what you can express with it. It gets way more interesting at that point. I don't think it's necessary, but it's great. I'm into that.
So after the Macau sessions and after you guys got back, did either one of you almost have a moment where you forgot your American versions of your shows? Because you talk about you thought that if you're doing this show this particular way because it worked for that particular audience in Macau, because it was a very strange audience, as you kept saying over and 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 over again. I totally believe you. I've heard all the stories. But did you ever at one point accidentally slip into the Macau version while you were here back in the States?
I will say the only mistake I think I made is I didn't allow enough of a gap from getting back from Macau to jumping into doing. I did it a week after I got back. I did a week at the castle. I did 21 shows. And that was a mistake because of just simple performance fatigue. And I didn't have as much fun as I think I would have if I were to wait a week or a month longer. I needed time to just decompress and take a break. So that was total bullshit. I think that was just us worrying that PG-13. We wouldn't be able to adjust. Total horse crap.
Man, that theory is a piece of shit.
Piece of shit of a show right there. Three men swear for now.
I don't think that was a valid critique at all. That was just us, you know, saying things. But
I honestly think that in the moment that you guys were saying this, and it was actually kind of beautiful to listen to. Because you were genuinely worried. I mean, there was this real beautiful, like, kind of genuine worry. My question was not about, like, you guys are stupid in this case. Yeah. I'm not debating you on this one. More or less, I was curious to know because I've never experienced that. I've never had that experience in my life. I wonder if anything like crept back in and stayed in. Like, for example, you had a thing, Nick, where you would take the card out of your mouth, but then because they just thought it was far more, disgusting or whatever, you would try to hand it to them and you would drop it on them or something like that. I'm trying to remember what the bit was. You dropped the card on them. And did you ever just do that to an American audience just to see, like, what happened? Or,
yeah,
like,
I put it in the bag, and then if they don't take it, I do drop it on them now. So, yeah, that's something that stayed.
So that's something that did creep in, even though you thought it would probably only work for
Something that came out of pure frustration from the Chinese.
Is it because you just wanted to throw things at them? Is that how
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it was more so just – you could see the uncomfort, and I in the whole front or the whatever row I'm going up to was clearly uncomfortable. They didn't want to take this, card that came out of my mouth. So I'm like, oh, it'd be funny if I just dropped it on them. And then, what is their reaction to that? If I'm overanalyzing this tiny moment in the show,
and you've kind of kept that bit though.
I do if they don't take it immediately,
you just throw it on.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Simon.
Yeah,
you,
I was unlike Nick, and purely by good luck, not by good judgment, I did have a bit of a break. The weirdest thing for me was coming out of that. How many shows a week? I've forgotten. Infinite shows a week.
Well, they doubled yours halfway through to where it was three, and then it became minimum
the
six.
The show after you, because it starts with, oh, this is you, Simon. Oh, Nick, you're doing so many more shows than me. I get it. And then like two or three shows into it, you're like, it goes back. Oh, they doubled my shows, and you could hear like the sadness and remorse in your voice, Simon. It's amazing.
It's so true.
It's absolutely amazing.
I just love how up top he was. He's like, yeah, it's fine. We were supposed to be doing some restaurant sets. It's in the contract. It's fine. And then like 2 weeks later, you're like, this is ridiculous.
It's weird because, and I know we did talk about this towards the end of it. Macau 100% made me a better performer in so many ways. And I'm so grateful to it for that. I came back. I luckily did have a break. But it was amazing that the next thing I did was a cruise ship gig where you do two shows in a week.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to 1,000. And that was such a bizarre gear shift going into that. It was great. But the biggest thing I noticed is that Macau really helped me in ways that stayed in the act afterwards. And I'd already been kind of starting this journey. It pulled my head out of my butthole for a bit, in a good way. I'd been to like getting into this like pretentious wanker territory of like, oh, it's going to be introspective and give the audience this experiential journey.
Right.
And because in Mandarin I couldn't do that.
You know how much I love that.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
you know, love that.
Such a big
exactly.
fan of it. Go ahead.
And I, like with a lot of people in their notes, people have to kind of come to their own realization of that.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you can help them along. But in Mandarin, I didn't have the vocabulary to get all highbrow and full of shit. And over that 3 months, I discovered kind of the joy of just doing an entertaining show and connecting with the crowd. And that has really lingered a lot more in my stuff back in the West in a really good way. Like, you just general going, playing for straight showmanship and engagement rather than conceptual highbrow stuff. And there's time and a place for that.
Yeah. There's that really there, at one point you mentioned, you had to change, because you would do the finger thing, the finger thing that you do, the old gag with the thumb removable and whatever, thumb. Removable thumb, but you have this whole sort of like heightened bit about it. I've threatened to steal it many times, and it's really good. And so you do this thing, and then you said in China you actually had to sort of like expose it quicker than you would normally.
Yeah.
Is that something you now use when you think maybe they're not into it as much? I mean, maybe something that would play maybe in California wouldn't play to the same group, say, if you were in Alabama. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, do you think if you would have to like change that up to like fit mostly?
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. And no, that was just China.
That was just China. 100%.
Okay. Every Western audience has been. And it's not like an unsophistication thing. It's just a familiarity thing and a culture thing. It's always been people get that instantly in the West. They get, oh, he knows that we know that's a dumb gag. Boom, connection's fine. That was very much, I'd forgotten about that till you mentioned it. Yeah, that was just there. I realized.
Oh, no, I did the reading, guys.
Yeah, you got the notes.
I did the reading.
It's impressive.
Did you ever find out, either of you, find out why there is no seatbelts in cabs in China?
Did we talk about this?
I thought you found out.
I did find out. I can't believe we talked about this, but maybe we didn't. Yeah, maybe we didn't. Yeah,
I maybe I skipped over it. It's possible. Maybe.
This may or may not be a repeat. I can't remember. Yeah, I went on. I asked around. No one knew. I went online. No one knew. And then you know when you have that experience where you realize you actually knew the answer all along. You just didn't want to admit it to yourself. Right. Often about bad relationships and things like that. We all know. I finally found on the China subreddit, Reddit/whatever/China, someone had asked that same question, and buried in the comments was one comment by someone who clearly understood China on a deep level. And the question was, why are there no seatbelts in the cabs in Greater China? And the comment was, there's no fucking why, because it's fucking China. That's the correct answer. And I kind of deep down always kind of knew that was the answer. There's no reason. There's no logic.
The way it is.
Someone did it. Everyone else started doing it. No one thought about it. Wow. It's the same reason.
Many nights our cab driver would drive us home with two or three cell phones, two of which were playing different video games, none of which were a GPS, hitting the buttons, playing his little his Jewel game or whatnot, his Chinese game, and driving at the same time, nearly hitting stray animals. So,
By the way, though, I can't remember if we mentioned this. On the last day that I left the House of Magic, you know, feeling good. It had been a good run. I'd gained a lot from it. It had been tough.
You've gained a lot from it, but your money eventually.
Yeah, money. Oh man, yeah.
We're not going to go into that. Obviously, that's been well documented.
It's been very
well documented. But an amazing story.
Yeah.
And again, just so you know, because I know the story, we know each other, we're friends. I've heard it way before the podcast. But when I heard it on the podcast again, I still could not help but just exclaim, my God, what is going on?
What a journey. But on the final morning, it was cab to the ferry to Hong Kong, flight back to America. The last cab I caught in Macau had seatbelts in the back.
Oh, yes. Remember this.
It couldn't have been better.
You sent me a photo.
Yeah. I have a photo of me doing a VP sign in the back of the cab with a seat clipped safely into a seatbelt. It was the first and only seatbelt I saw in a cab in Macau. It was on my final morning. It was poetry.
Poetry. This question's for Nick. Who's this podcast really for? Because that seems to change, if not per episode, per minute in the episode.
It's the reason my career has never taken off. I don't know who my target market is.
Okay.
It's always been for people who aren't magicians, but magicians can listen in too. But then it flips. It goes. Then I go the opposite, where like we'll be talking specifically about a trick, and then we'll explain it to the layman listening. So I don't know. I can't. It's hard to bring up because, especially after this week's events with Hardwick, the show was inspired by Nerdist and by WTF because they are comedians talking very introspectively about something that not a lot of people should know about, but making it accessible to everybody.
Sure.
And that's kind of what the goal of this was. So now I have to have another inspiration. I don't want to go too much into that because everything else I'm still trying to process.
And it's a shitty situation, and yeah. I no reason to talk about it here. But even let's talk about Mark's I think is even a better example. WTF, Mark Marin's podcast is a much better example of what I think this podcast is, which is again talking about comedians. But even his podcast then started going to just talking to anybody, it became sort of just an interview cast as opposed to
that way.
And that kind of happens, I think, in this because it organically grows. I would say if you want me to direct this podcast, I would say
the past 58 minutes has been that.
Yeah, that's great. The two of you work together are great, and every time you're not here, Simon, you're missed. Mm-hmm. I understand, you got a schedule and all that stuff, but I think the more you guys are able to do this together, at least once a month, and if you're putting these things out twice a month, I mean, do at least one with Simon, then do another interview with Up. And I would love to see the two of you interview somebody so we can get that dynamic that I think you're going for, which is not just about interviewing somebody where you just start, all the stuff you hear in any sort of interview show. But more of these sort of stories that are directly related, and are not only interesting, entertaining, but maybe informative to those in any sort of field of entertainment.
Well, it's starting to transition that way because if you look, the past three interviews I've done aren't magicians; they are variety guys, and so it's starting to transition to. And even Harrison, I consider Harrison Greenbaum a stand-up. He's a good magician, but he's more of a stand-up.
Yeah, no, I agree, and he's an awesome stand-up.
Yeah,
who also does sufficiently awesome magic to legitimately be a magician as well.
Like, that's what's so
great.
Thursday.
That's one of the many great things about that guy. He's stand-up funny, but also his magic is actually good magic, which is, as you said, often not common.
Yeah. Well, most comedy magic is neither. Yeah. So.
Whereas he gets A+.
And that's not my line either. I forget whose line that is.
That's Patton Oswalt. Yeah.
Is that Patton Oswalt?
Is that Patton Oswalt? Well, Patton Oswalt has a joke of most comedy magicians are either shitty magicians who know a dick joke or shitty comedians who learned a rope trick. I think I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, I mean, he says that in the, when he's talking about that guy who the hate fuck in the audience guy.
With the hamper.
I'm making less than $5? So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love how we've just left PG far behind now. We've just doubled down on that.
Well, John said fuck so many times when he was critiquing the PG that we are
bleep it out. You got equipment there. I've seen it in front of you.
Oh, I'm not going through that. I'm not listening to this again. Are you kidding me?
So there's that. All right. Simon, what is your deal with comic book fans, fans of comic book movies and theme parks? Basically all the things I love most in my life.
He just doesn't get it.
Through most of the Macau sessions, you shit on them many, many times. And then I would like to tell a little story that at my wedding... one of the days where I said we should go see Infinity War because Simon comes up to us and says, hey, I just saw Black Panther on the plane. Not my thing. I don't think I was the guy who was made that movie for, which I believe is you're being a little racist. But anyway, but I finally saw Black Panther. I would like to see Infinity War. And Costa, one of our friends, our mutual friends, and again, a comic book writer, another fellow comic book fan of and a friend, he goes, well, we should take him to see Infinity War. And I said, that's great. Let's go to Infinity War. So we decide to go to Infinity War. And the entire time, Simon is going there with us. He's talking about how these movies are so predictable. I know exactly X, Y, and Z. And I know where this is going the entire time. And it's entertainment and it's fun, I guess. That's exactly how you say it. It's fun, I guess. But, I know where this is going. I always have this get down. It's never going to surprise me. And so myself, Costa, our friend Lisa, who's also a big fan of this stuff as well, we go to Infinity War, which we've all seen a bunch of times, myself now 8 times, and we go to watch you watch the movie because something happens at the end of Infinity War, and we're just watching your face the whole time, and at one point, and I have to admit, this is brilliant, at one point you go, all right, I didn't see that coming. That was, all right, you got me. And I loved it. And that, to me, vindicated me for all the times I have heard you slag off what I love on this podcast. So anyway, that was the story I wanted to
tell. I will freely concede that there have been many moments I have thought were really good in many of these movies.
Yeah.
You know, like, I really enjoyed Thor Ragnarok because it was very funny.
Oh,
you know,
hilarious.
Like, the first Iron Man movie was really great. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. It's just, it's even in Infinity War and, say, Black Panther, like, even though they were good movies, like, there was a lot of good stuff in them. Like, just whenever two characters fight, it's never it feels like a choreographed actor fight scene. Not like, again, the Brienne versus, my favorite, the Brienne versus the Hound fight in Game of Thrones. That's what I want a damn fight scene to be. I want to feel it. I want to believe it. I want to really... And comic book movies almost never do that for me. And that's okay. I get it. They're still good. I don't have a problem with anyone else enjoying them. I enjoy some weird shit that other people don't like. You know,
right.
I'm just some bizarre crap that I get other people wouldn't enjoy.
Your porn list alone.
Exactly. It's weird. I get it. It's okay.
What I do love is how much you slag off this stuff, and then you use comics as a reference to talking about magic theory.
Oh, yeah, because
what's happens in between the
I
panels.
I love a like lot this, of comics.
Yeah.
A lot of comics. And that is honestly why I think I'm so angry at so many of these movies, because to me they have mostly, not all, Deadpool was great. Logan was great. Iron Man was great in its own. Like, you know,
come on, Infinity War. You did not see that coming.
I absolutely did not see that coming. Yeah. I was genuinely very shocked and surprised by that moment. But many of the other parts of it, I was going, ugh, here we go. Same old tired tropes again. Oh, Star-Lord's being a dickhead. What a surprise. But, you know, like, the ending, absolutely. Oh, yeah. And I definitely enjoyed the experience. But things like Punisher Max, think most of them, Jessica Jones, like most of those, that's what I love.
Yeah. Jessica Jones, is the first season of that is amazing.
Yeah. Again, I love the comics. I felt the TV show just mostly did not live up to what the comics are capable of. And that's why I get so angry, because I know it can be so great. Many of the comics themselves are so fantastic. Again, like the Civil War comics, so much better than the movie.
Oh,
the movie
I completely disagree, but okay.
Yeah.
But I get what
you're
yeah.
saying.
That's
to
but
a man
now we're
wearing
going...
a Captain America shirt, hat, yeah. and yeah. A Avengers pin.
Avengers pin.
Yeah.
This is a S.H.I.E.L.D. technically. But
S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so many of those comics I have just loved so much over the years. Not all of them. Some of them I think, it's kind of hooked. But right. that's because I'm into a certain kind of thing that... The movie's not aimed at. That's all right. It's fine.
I get it. You know? I get it. But I it's funny. And I remember you describing Hong Kong Disneyland as a keychain park, and I'm like, I kind of agree with you on that. But it's a good keychain.
Yeah.
It's a good keychain.
It's a good keychain.
It's
a lot.
And
I get
fun.
It.
I have
enjoyed everything. Every theme park I've been to, I've enjoyed. Right. I've never not had a good time.
Right.
I just don't. I can't personally relate to the whole. Like annual passes and making it a thing, and that's okay. If people like that, that's fine. I'm not crapping on that. It's just I'm annoyed that there aren't more movies that I can enjoy. I think that's why I limit. If there were also movies that were the kind of thing I was into, and there are, just not. It's just a minority of.
Well,
them.
How many Crocodile Dundee sequels do you need? that's
as many as I can get, John.
You know what?
As many
so
as I can.
So sad. That was a perfect line for that, and I totally, as I'm coming out of my mouth, I'm just like, how many crocodile, crocodile, like, it's snark doesn't work if you can't talk correctly. All right.
Crocodile Dundee in America is like, imagine if everyone's perception of America was based on Davy Crockett.
Well, there you go.
It's like not inaccurate,
not
for
accurate.
A certain time and place.
That is true for a certain time
yeah.
and place. So my last point because I'm sure we've already talked up a storm here.
Well, you have a hard out too.
I have a hard out, but yeah. My last point, the social media stuff. I'm not disagreeing with you because I'm not, but I want you to elaborate, Simon, and I want to talk to you about Nick about this as well. There seems to be, you have this idea that those who have a really bad social media presence seem most likely are probably better performers, entertainers of some sort.
You've made that point
a few times in the past. And I would love to have actually sat there and actually take these quotes so I can play them for you so that you can hear your own voice say it, because I'm not making this up. I kind of just don't disagree with you on that. I think you might have a good point there. What about, because I know what I hate about social media, because I freely admit I hate it. What do you think is the most distracting thing that is taking away from art or from that person's, you know, worth as a performer? I mean, like, do you think it's they're spending so much time on this social media stuff that they're not doing the work that then turns into good live shows. Is that what it is, or is there more to it than just that?
It's a really good question, and I will absolutely freely admit there, I'm certain there is some self-serving bias in this belief, right? Mm-hmm. This is obviously, at least a component of this is to make me feel better about my own lack of ability in a field that would be useful to my career and life.
Sure.
You know, fully will own that. I think that's definitely part of it. I think there's like a time and sort of mental energy, mental attention part to it. I think it's that, I was talking to someone about this the other day, about exactly that concept of, it, a lot of this stuff that gets really popular on social media is sort of, it's like the McDonald's burger of entertainment. It almost feels, I don't want to sound elitist, I don't mean it that way, but like just pandering to the lowest common denominator, going for the quick, easy like rather than something more lingering and substantial. Mm-hmm. And that may just be, if that's what the majority of the market wants, then so be it, and I'm in the wrong. I guess that just makes me unhappy. What do you really do?
Right. And then, Nick, do you, I mean, you seem to have a more active social media presence
than
Simon does. Or me, for that matter, because I'm terrible at it. But
well, you have a big Facebook following. Anything you post gets a bunch of likes.
And it's purposely designed that way because I don't do any – I've decided that social media is a virus on this earth.
Yeah.
And that it has created a lot of what's going on right now in the world. And so I only use it as an out terminal.
Yeah.
I don't look at my news feed. I don't do anything. I only put out, like, here's me at a show. Here's me and my new wife. Here's me, you know what I mean? Like, just happy, nothing political, nothing, you know, nothing. Because I don't want to be dealing with it.
Yeah.
It really depressed me, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
I've since transitioned my personal Facebook into just purely promotional. Like, I'm accepting friend requests from people I don't know, and I'm taking off as much personal information as I can from there just for safety purposes. But I'm a bit of a hypocrite in it because, yeah, we've just ripped it apart, but also, like, I almost have 700 followers on Instagram. Like, oh, I hope I get it up to 700 because, you know, it's purely just for advertisement purposes.
Yeah. Well, but you can hate your job, but know you need to keep it for the salary, right?
Just because I posted about the show I directed, people came. And
That's like, the way it goes, man.
Oh, yeah.
So that's completely. That's how it is. So it's like, I will continue to do it, but I'm in the same boat you are of. I do not comment politically. I don't say anything political. If I think of a funny joke, I'll put it up there. I use it as a writing exercise because I enjoy writing short form comedy essay or in short form jokes. But that's it. I think honestly, if you put something negative up there, left, right, whatever, that's political or controversial or a judgment, you're not helping anybody. You're just making it worse. Anybody can, and I'm talking about myself up until last year, anybody can criticize, condemn, or complain, but I think it's up to us all to just use Facebook or Instagram as, here's a fun photo, here's some fun things I'm doing, I hope you're doing well.
You know what's so funny about that? And this is where the line was drawn for me. This is when I decided, nope, I'm out. I put My social media, Facebook, is mostly Facebook. It has been as benign as it can be for quite a long time. And one of the things I post up is my love of Marvel that I just went through. And I posted the latest poster for Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'm excited about that movie. I think it's be fun. I said, cool poster, because it's a special poster that he made and it looked really neat. I liked the way it looked. And I said, look this cool poster. And the three comments on it were all about, well, this is very formulaic, this poster. So everything now becomes a debate. Like, I can't even just put up, like, a Marvel poster and say, doesn't this look fun? No. It becomes a debate.
The best example of this is we just had – Scott Neary was on a few months ago, and he posted recently about some dog that saved 9,000 lives in 9/11. And everybody's commenting, sharing, you know, all these people you don't know. It's just showing. It's one of those things that goes viral. And all Scott Neary does is go, don't you think if this is true, we would have heard about this by now? And people just ripped him apart and got angry and just clearly pointing out of how ridiculous something can go around and, you know, just how people believe things that are just not true.
As to your point of virus on the world, 100% agree. It's just, it's making... I don't – were people always this gullible and dumb, probably, but then this has given so much fuel to that.
Yeah,
it's made it so much more efficient to spread bullshit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the worst. Yeah. You know, that's always been out there, but it's yeah. Anyway, yeah. Well, oh my God, I come on this show and you've dragged me down. By the end of it, you've made me just as existential as the rest of you.
You brought this up. This was in your little black notebook.
It's in my black book. So that's all I have to say. Other than I love you boys and
love you,
you do a good job
and
yeah. Also I wanted to thank you, Nick. I wanted to thank you so much for the wedding gift you got us. it was really great. It was a really great.
Oh, you know, everybody got you a wedding gift. So
yeah, no,
fine.
I'm sure. Yeah. So, oh, and I would. Oh, it's
Simon.
Simon,
did Simon didn't show up.
Oh, Simon's, but I'm sure it's in the mail.
Oh, let
we
me,
got
yeah,
you.
Let me
we
check
got you a
that.
Big mirror.
Let me. Yeah, it's a very nice mirror. We have it up on the wall right now.
Simon's visibly turning red right
now. Yeah, we just wanted to thank
no,
you.
No, I better check the tracking on that.
No, yes. I think you should check the tracking on that.
I can't. The only reason I can't take credit for that, I'm married to a lovely lady, and she's like, we need to get them something. I'm like, oh yeah, we should. And then she made that happen, so I can't take any credit for
that. All right. One day Simon will be married, and he'll get us that wedding gift.
My gift was the facial expression at the end of Infinity War.
Well,
it's my gift to you.
No,
bullshit.
No,
that
does not help my wife at all. My wonderful wife who loves you.
John, so. If anybody wants to see when your public shows or a lecture you're doing or you're teaching a class at the castle right now.
I teach a class at the castle, yeah.
Where do they go to get that info?
After we
just bash social media.
I know, right? The class of the castle, you can go to magiccastle.com and the class is there. And I'm teaching a class about going from close-up magic as a close-up magic performer to parlor magic and talking about
you're probably one of the only people I can see teaching this class because I feel like most magicians either fit into one category and have a tough time transitioning. So I think this is good for a lot of people.
Well, I've been transitioning not only from man
to
woman,
you've done a lot of work.
But also from close-up to parlor. And I would say that about 4 years ago, I decided that I wanted to be a stand-up magician, and that's all I really wanted to do. Mm. So I still do close-up. It happens, but for the most part, I'm doing stand-up.
The lifestyle's better in so many ways.
Yeah, I like it. It's been a nice, fun field to play with. So anyway, I've been doing that, and course will be at the Magic Castle, and I think it's almost full, but try to sign up for it. You can find me on Twitter if I ever tweet anything. It's mostly just a retweet of my wife, who does write things.
She's very funny.
She's a writer.
Great writer.
Very good. And it's at CardJohn, CardJohn. Twitter, and then if I deem you worthy, you can be my friend on Facebook. I have a Facebook fan page, but I never use it.
Yeah.
It's only
who uses those.
Well, I stopped fans. Because you put something up there, and it tells you it's like 26 people saw this.
Yeah.
Like, what's the
well,
point?
Because of ever since they nerfed the algorithm to
they want
make
to
it,
pay.
Yeah, and screw that.
Yeah, so there's that, but I'm on Facebook. But I mean, I'm around. I have a website, cardjohn.com. Yeah. CRD, you know, I do things, but I'm mostly not.
I have notes for your website. We'll go into
that.
Oh,
we'll get to that next episode.
Oh, I love it. I will take. See, here's the thing. I love notes.
Whereas I'm too busy trying to make my show good to promote it.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
it's a good show that nobody will see.
That's my excuse for everything. John, I need you to take out the trash. I'm sorry. I can't take out the trash. I'm trying to make my show good.
Well, thank you, John Armstrong, for doing this free podcast.
Great.
You're a good man, good friend.
I love it.
And Simon, I'm glad you could make it.
And for anyone who listened and thought this sounded harsh or mean, no, this is good constructive feedback. This is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Get with the program. Get notes from people. Embrace them. Run with them. You don't have to agree with them, but for God's sake,
exactly,
listen to them.
But disagree with them later, not during.
Take them in. Like, this is also, by the way, as a little coda, something I've noticed a lot of performers saying is getting annoyed when people offer them unsolicited feedback that's dumb. I'm like, no!
You're literally just talking about me right now, but yeah.
Oh, that's right, yeah. You were one of them. It's okay, I love you. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
It's
usually coming from people I don't respect.
Yeah.
Anybody I respect,
and that's totally fine.
One of the best piece of advice I ever, piece of like a note I ever got was from a guy who I literally have no respect for whatsoever.
Yeah.
Sure.
But sometimes a broken clock is right.
Every now and then.
Yeah, you know, twice a day.
I
right?
think
so
if you're
you know?
Legit angry at it, you know they're right.
Yeah, or at least they're onto something.
I got the same note from two people I don't respect magically, you know, what they do. But at the end of my week at the castle, I was like, yep, they're right.
Yeah,
they're right.
And you know what? If someone who really is dumb gives you a genuinely bad note, you know what you can do? ignore it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Ignore
later. You can
later.
Just do that. What it does say you yes, no damage. Take every note from everybody all the time. They are the best things you can possibly get. Take them graciously because then people will give you more of them. It's what you want. It makes
I
you
agree.
Better.
Okay, we're 17 minutes over this hour. So,
and John's right. late for his thing.
John's got to go on another podcast.
I know.
Traitor.
I know, traitor.
Okay, bye everybody.
Bye everybody.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs, @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.